Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we begin the program by taking a look at saving for your retirement. Frank Armstrong of Coconut Grove, Florida, founder of the investment advisor firm Investor Solutions, Inc., co-author with Paul Brown of Save Your Retirement, and author of The Informed Investor. That one's published by Amicon. Save Your Retirement's published by FT Press. Great to have him back to talk about what we can do in the way of saving for retirement. Certainly, we hope you'll join in with your own investment questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Frank's with us by phone. Hi, Frank. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Always a pleasure, Larry.
Well, we've got a record number of Americans who are making hardship withdrawals from their 401k retirement accounts. And we also have some Americans pulling out of the stock market, wondering, what should I be doing with my investments? Comments on any of those, or both of those?
Well, if you have to make a hardship withdrawal to prevent your firstborn from starving, you know, that's unfortunate, but that's what you got to do what you got to do. For any less of a purpose than a true emergency, it would be a shame. Those retirement funds are, in my opinion, almost sacred funds that really ought to be the last thing that you tap in a financial emergency. People are pulling out of the stock market in record numbers, and that's really very unfortunate. Unless they absolutely need to have that money to consume today, in which case they probably shouldn't have been in the stock market anyway, it's predictably irrational, predictably dysfunctional. If you're in the stock market, you've got to understand it's going to go up and down. When it goes down, you have to just suck it in and say, okay, Frank told me it was going to happen, but I'm not invested for tomorrow. I'm invested for down the road. If you've got money to put into the market, now would be a good time. I think yesterday one of the major publications was saying that the price-earnings ratio, which is a key measurement of the value of the stock market, is better today than it was a couple of years ago, just prior to the market running up 80%. Need to get into the mindset of it's a good thing if you're buying or can afford to buy for the market to be down. You should be doing the happy dance.
Well, that's true. As long as if you have money to invest, should be putting it in there.
Right. I mean, you know, it's in investing by its very nature is a long-term process, but we know, I mean, hundreds of studies have shown that people who are willing to buy when the market is down do much better than people who jump in at the all-time high because it's gone up and they think then it can go up forever.
And just one other thing on the 401ks, you have to be at least 59 and a half anyway to be able to withdraw without penalty. You're paying a pretty stiff penalty if you withdraw early.
Right. There's a number of ways that you can get the money out prior to 59 and a half without taking the penalty. The hardship withdrawal is just a tragedy if you really have the kind of hardship. And if you do that, you'll pay the taxes and the penalty, but you need the money.
Yeah.
If you desperately need the money, you desperately need the money. Nobody wants to see anybody starve.
Right.
It is an emergency source of funds, and it's a tragedy that many Americans are so financially strapped. Obviously, we need to get the employment numbers back up and the economy humming again.
Let's go to Carrie in Hobart. Carrie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I'd like to have him explain how an annuity works and how that can be used to pay for long-term health care insurance.
The annuity you give typically an insurance company, although you could do it with your son if you wanted to. You give them a lump sum of money, and presuming you want to start payments right away, they guarantee you some minimum income for the rest of your life. And that minimum income is, in fact, a rather minimum income. If it's a fixed annuity, at today's interest rates, it probably even I looked at this for a woman age 70 a while ago. And if she lives to her expected life expectancy, she'll only have a 4% return of her principal, even though the income will be nominally higher. Each payment is a portion of principal and interest, if that's clear. It's like amortizing a mortgage. Mm-hmm. Every time you pay the mortgage company, it's partially principal and partially interest, and the reverse happens in an annuity. The good thing about annuity is that you can't outlive it. The bad thing is that the total return from the annuity is rather poor. You don't have any estate planning problem because the insurance company just takes it when you die.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you don't have any inflation protection. But for some people, they think that's an adequate trade-off.
And how does that work with long-term health care insurance?
I have no idea. I guess you just take the money out and pay. I don't think there's a direct payment or any kind of tax-sheltered payment from the annuity to the long-term health care. You just have to take from your annuity payment and pay the long-term health care. I may be mistaken. If so, it snuck by me.
I think there was a new law change, and that's why I was unclear on how that would work.
We'll have to look into that. Thank you.
I'll look into it, but I'm unaware of it today.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with your question at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. How hurt are retirement savings because of the economy?
Well, we finally started to have a net positive savings last year. For some time, it had been net negative. So people are savings in one way or another. However, if you're looking at your accumulated pile of money, it may have been hit relatively hard depending on where you are in your career and how you had it invested. Again, if you're young and have a long time to go to retirement, you should be doing a happy dance. This is a great thing for you, a great opportunity to buy stocks that you'll use 10, 20, 30 years from now down the road. You're buying at a wonderful, wonderful price. If you're closer in to retirement, then hopefully you've set aside enough in a short-term, high-quality instrument, you know, guaranteed type stuff, that you don't have to be dependent on the market going up every year to support your near-term needs. But there's very little doubt that across the board, the vast majority of retirement savings are down. Now, what we see is if we look at savers, the people in the 401k system, many of them are quite young, and they actually are positive because they did, in fact, have a good portion of their career invested. The younger you are, the more you are likely to have invested at very low rates during the last 3 years, and you may actually be positive.
Oh.
So it depends on your age, where you are in your career, and how you were invested. If you were invested at too much risk late in your career, you hurt yourself pretty badly. If you were appropriately allocated, then you're not necessarily overjoyed, but you're in a position to survive. If you're young, you should be salting it away and happy.
Yeah. We had another, I believe maybe an email from someone who wondered, how can you expect the country's economy to grow when all the major manufacturers are moving operations to China and elsewhere?
That's a loaded political question. It's almost the third rail. there's a lot of things that come into play here. Number one, it's a cheap political shot to take at corporations that move their headquarters offshore for tax reasons, because we have one of the worst corporate taxes in the world here. And if I was on the board of directors of a major corporation, it would be irresponsible for me not to consider that. Then we get into the manufacturing area, where it's difficult to compete against low-cost labor in foreign countries in some cases. And the answer to that is to upgrade your, if you're an individual, upgrade your education and skills continuously over life so that you don't get left behind. A lot of those jobs that moved offshore are not particularly jobs that people wanted to have. The auto industry is an exception, of course. Those were good-paying jobs, but even so, they ran into problems, and they had made promises that were unsustainable, and they knew it. The boards made pension and wage promises that they knew they couldn't sustain, but based on the time-tested management principle of IBG, which means I'll be gone when it hits the fan. they made promises they couldn't sustain, and it was a slow motion train wreck as they conceded pension and wage promises to unions that they just knew were unsustainable, but kicked it down the road just a little. There's it's a very difficult question. I'm basically for free trade, and I think that many of the jobs that were lost. I feel for people who lost poor jobs, but I hope that they'll go retrain and get much better jobs. It's a tough question. If you're the guy whose ox got gored, then it's very, very painful, and I don't want to say that that's not the case.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Thomas Hoenig, who is the Kansas City Reserve head of the Kansas City Reserve Bank, had said that, I read somewhere, where he pointed out that private companies have created about 630,000 jobs so far this year. So there's not what they'd hoped for, but it's still a positive nonetheless.
I think that most people believe that there is an economic recovery underway. It's certainly not the robust, balls to the wall type recovery that we'd like to see, but we really took a major hit 3 years ago. The financial sector just threatened to unwind completely, and we can't have an economy without a financial sector. So it's going to take a while to unwind that. We still have far more houses than we have people who can afford to buy them, and so housing construction is not going to be robust. We probably, as a nation, need to decide what we want to do about housing. Not everybody who lives out there maybe ought to have a house. People who move a lot ought not to have a house. Maybe they should be renting rather than buying. People that can't afford a down payment, we found, should be renting rather than buying until they can. But we have terrible or huge tax subsidies to promote housing, and then we promoted it in other ways through the lending, and we created this big bubble. And maybe we need to rethink part of that to see if that's wise going forward.
Frank Armstrong, our guest today, author of Save Your Retirement. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more of your calls now as we visit with Frank Armstrong about your retirement. Let's turn to Judy at Appleton next. Judy, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I'm 67 years old. I have an individual retirement account, but I also have several CDs that I've been trying to ladder. My question is, at this point, I have some expenses that I am anticipating, and I need to take some money out of somewhere. I don't think my budget is going to handle these expenses. So I hear that income tax will be going up. Is this a good time to start taking the required portion of my individual retirement account I'll have to take at 70? Or should I look for the money elsewhere and hold out until I'm 70?
Hmm. Well, taxes are probably going to go up, but how much they go up is going to depend upon how high your tax bracket is now. For people many Americans pay no taxes at all, and if they took money out of their income taxes, if they took money out of their IRAs, it would be an extremely low tax rate.
Well, I'm not in that case. I have a very good retirement plan, and I'm not high income, but I'm comfortably middle. Mm-hmm. And in taking money out now, well, I would try to arrange to take out only what would not kick me up a tax bracket. But
right, that would be the good strategy, because in fact, there's very few people who would want to take the opposite side of a bet that said tax rates are going to go down or stay the same. Invariably, they're going to have to go up one way or another.
And invariably, I am going to have to pay taxes on this money.
Right, and invariably, they're going to be higher down the road. I can't imagine a scenario where they're not going to be. So taking some out that didn't kick you into a higher bracket today might leave you total overall wealthier.
Okay.
Then if you delay.
All righty, that was my question. Thank you very much.
Well, I hope I was clear on that. Yeah.
Thank you for calling. That was Judy in Appleton. Let's turn to Judith in Bailey's Harbor. Hi, Judith.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Well, I have a question regarding a 16-year-old grandson who has his first summer job, and I'm interested in starting a Roth IRA for him. And I know the maximum contribution to a Roth would be $5,000. If he makes less than $5,000, is that contribution based on his gross or his net earnings?
No, it'd be based on his taxable earnings. And would you like to adopt me? That's a very generous thing for you to do, and it's a very wise thing for you to do. You know, if you can afford to make a gift to your child or grandchild, that money he can recover tax-free for the rest of his life, and it's a wonderful thing to do for him. But the max, if he makes $3,000, you can do a $3,000 Roth for him. If he makes $10,000, you can still only do a five.
Right. I knew what the maximum was.
Yeah, right.
I didn't know whether it was based on his total earnings or the net.
Boy, you think about it. How old is he? 16.
16.
Oh.
If I could have done that every year, or somebody did that for me when I was 16, and then they stopped when I was 25, I'd have enough to retire today. I mean, it's a great, great thing if you look at the compounding over time.
And what would
just
be a good
wonderful thing?
Oh, thank you. What would be a good thing to invest in for him?
Well, he's only 16. You presume he's not going to use the money for a long, long time.
Right.
So I would look very strongly at the bonds. I mean, at the stock market, because that's where today I think you have an excellent price out there for the entire world's markets, and it's hard to imagine that when he wants to use the money, we won't have had years and years of good, strong economic growth in the world economy, and it should be worth a lot more.
Yeah, well, I was wondering if, like Fidelity has retirement funds of, say, 2024 or something like that. Do you put it in that kind of a fund, or
I wouldn't touch that. I would at his age. I would simply, this is my value judgment, and I can't give you individual advice.
Right.
But I would tell you, if I was doing it for me, and I was that age, I'd be 100% in the stock market, and I wouldn't pay the extra freight for a retirement type fund like that. I'd probably go to some place like Vanguard and buy their Total World Index.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling, Judith. And we'll take some more calls here. Let's go to Daryl in Exonia. Hi, Daryl.
Hello. I guess my question kind of piggybacks on what the other lady said about, are the tax rates going to go up? And, like, I'm thinking if your 401k plan, if you take it out early, you pay an extra 10% penalty, but you're paying at today's rate. And if you let it sit in there, if the rate's going to be whatever it is when you take it out, aren't you going to actually lose money by leaving it in there? I mean, our 401k, the way the stock market was, we put in $1,000 and they took out $1,300 in losses. So it's like almost like you want to take your money out of there.
Well, it's down temporarily, but that doesn't mean it's always going to be down. It's hard to imagine that most people's tax rates are going to increase by more than the penalty plus tax today. So you will have given up the opportunity to get the appreciation. I don't think it would be a wise thing for everybody to raid their 401ks based on future tax rates going up. That math just isn't going to work.
Okay.
But what I would do in anticipation of that is I'd make any further contributions to the 401k to a Roth, especially if you're in a lower bracket today. And anticipate being at a higher one after retirement. That makes perfect sense to me.
Okay. Thank you for calling, Daryl. Eva in Campbellsport. On to you now. Hi, Eva.
Hi. I have a comment kind of on what you were saying about responsible corporations would take their jobs out of the United States and that we should be retraining. But I would like to know what we can retrain for. I mean, we can't even answer our telephones for our phone company. What are our options? And in order for a country to be strong, don't we need a diversification of income amongst ourselves? I mean, it was what built us when we were coming away from England is because we were able to stand on our own feet. And if we export all of those type of jobs, doesn't that make us weak in a lot of areas? And you seemed much more sympathetic for the financial institutes than for the people that make the financial institutes exist.
I have no sympathy for the financial institutes. If I came across that way, please accept my apologies. I believe collectively they're the dark side, corrupt, incompetent, and now insolvent. I don't have any sympathy for them at all. I have a great deal of sympathy for people who've lost a job, but I think and it's very concerning to me. I don't take it lightly at all, but I think we should have a public policy of free lifetime education opportunities so that people can retrain for high-tech jobs to replace the jobs that are lost that are typically lower tech. There are tremendous opportunities in everything from accounting to health to aerospace to technology, and some of those jobs are going unfilled because we can't find people to fill them. There's an imbalance between skills needed and people who are available. And I don't think as a country we've really addressed that the way we need to. We need more college-educated people, probably fewer attorneys and more MBAs, more engineers, more scientists to compete in the next century.
Yeah.
But it's a terribly troubling problem. But I didn't say I wanted to take the manufacturing jobs offshore. I said I would take the corporate headquarters offshore for tax purposes. You can still stay here and manufacture if you can do that economically. But I do think that many congressmen get up and make speeches about how awful it is, knowing full well that we have a prohibitive tax system here and that corporations would be irresponsible to stay and pay higher taxes than they needed to elsewhere in the world.
Hmm.
But then they want to take advantage of our skilled labor that we're supposed to be getting for, you know what I'm saying? You just said it. Everyone should have a free type of education in order to advance us, but the only way is if everybody pays for that. And aren't the big corporations kind of getting off pretty good if they can park somewhere else and take their money somewhere else and use our skills?
The big corporations, and again, you know, I don't have much sympathy for them. But on the other hand, if you're looking around the world and there's 100 countries where you could organize yourself and get lower tax rates, you have a duty to your shareholders to take advantage of that. And we have a duty as a country to become to have a tax system that's fair and competitive with the rest of the world. We're not very very tax efficient for our companies, and the whole issue of double taxation of dividends treatment of dividends not being tax deductible to the corporation. Some of those issues are economically very strange and cause huge capital distortions and the flight of company headquarters overseas, which I think is entirely justified.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Eva. Appreciate it. Larry in Madison, we turn to you next. Hi, Larry.
Hi, good morning. Hey, my wife and I are about a year away from retirement, and I'm anticipating a need of $2,000 a month from our investments in addition to Social Security. How do I allocate the withdrawal from our investments?
depends on the size of your investment account. $2,000 a month is $24,000 a year.
We're roughly at about $700,000.
Well, if as a rule of thumb, 4% would make me very comfortable in terms of being able to withdraw forever. 5% would be comfortable. 6% makes me very uncomfortable, and 7%, I believe you probably ought to confine yourself to a small padded cell because the chances are that it's, you're going to run out of money.
I guess what I'm really asking, though, is out of our investments, we've got some traditional investments. We've got 401s. We've got IRA. We've got and within those, we have index funds. We have stock funds. How do you go about setting up the withdrawal from those individual funds? What do you take out first or second?
Okay.
Well, it depends on how they're allocated now and what the distribution is. In our office, we have some clients who have 100% private funds, and we have some that have 100% retirement accounts, and most of them fall somewhere in the middle. And so doing a tax strategy gets to be a little bit sophisticated. You must, depending on the size of the IRA, you have to plan for required minimum distributions down the road, and decide which assets should be inside the IRA and which outside. What we tend to use as a starting point is that if you're taking a 4% withdrawal, we want to have 7 to 10 years of liquid assets available no matter what the stock market does. So that would be, probably 40%-ish in very short-term high-quality bonds or CDs or something like that, treasury bills. And the balance could go for long-term growth. And then it's a matter of taking a look at your individual situation and seeing what your tax situation is and where you should put the various assets, because some of them have are quite tax unfriendly, like real estate investment trusts. You want to put those, to the extent that you have vessels for them, inside your IRAs. Other things with high turnover you want inside the IRAs, and on the outside you want things that aren't going to cause you much tax trouble. And then you have to decide on a strategy for withdrawing, again, depending on your individual situation.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to tell you that there's a cookie-cutter answer, but it comes down to you have an individual situation, and you really need to give it some thought. And if you can't do that yourself, maybe you should consider getting a professional to help.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. I thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling, Larry. And we have some open lines finally again, so we can get you on pretty quickly. At 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or email at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Sherry in Neenah next. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I just had a quick question. I have two young children, very young in age, and I've been putting some money in CDs, and I was thinking if that was a good idea or if I should just be putting money into savings or even go into the college era for saving money for them.
Are they, 5, 6 years old?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Well, the Section 529 plans, whether they're administered by a mutual fund company or if you go into the state funds, where if you pay the equivalent of 1 year tuition and fees today, they guarantee that when your child's ready for school, he'll have 1 year of tuition and fees, and that's a pretty solid deal. You can do the so-called Coverdell IRA for them. There's a variety of ways that you can save. CDs are probably today not very rewarding. You're getting to pay the taxes on them unless you put them in their name, which is awkward at that age. And there's not very much yield. On the other hand, with a reasonably long-term time horizon, the stock market might be a very attractive place for you to put all or part of that money.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
You have a number of different opportunities, and you have to evaluate and see what's best for your particular situation.
Yeah. So 529s are nice if you don't use it all. Let's say the child doesn't use it all. The child could use it on his or her child down the road.
Right, or his siblings, or, there's a whole almost anybody that's ever connected to you can use that funds. Even actually, Daddy could go back to school and get a graduate degree with that same money.
Yeah. So there's a lot of flexibility there. Bert in Appleton, on to you now. Hi, Bert.
Hi. How are you, Larry, and how are you, Geth? We're going to get right down to it, okay?
Okay.
October 2008, correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
NASDAQ was 14165. Where are you, Larry, today? Where are you, guest, today?
I'm probably down somewhat. I'm very heavily invested in equities. I think I'd probably be down 10% from that time. During the time the market was down, we were buying to take advantage of the lower prices, and to the extent that I was able to move some of my income into that, that's been good. But I'm not investing for tomorrow. I don't tend to look at it from day to day. I don't think most people should do that. But to be honest with you, I don't think I'm at the high water mark that I was in 2008.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm not. Although I've recovered quite a bit.
Oh, sure, we've recovered a lot, but we're not back to the high water mark.
No.
That doesn't concern me. I'm much richer than I would have been had I put all the money in very safe investments or tried some other scheme. I wouldn't have had all that money in 2008 if I hadn't invested aggressively when I was younger, and I did expect it to go up and down, and my net return over that entire period of time was quite good. Yeah. Taking a snapshot of saying from the high water mark, are you down, and saying, is that a successful approach because you're down, I don't think that's the appropriate way to measure.
Yeah. All right. Adam in Eau Claire, on to you. Hi, Adam.
Hello, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm 27 years old. I just got out of the Army, and I had government thrift savings plan that I wish to now roll over into my 2001, or my, I'm sorry, into my Roth IRA. And I'm wondering, should I do that when the stock market and overall economy is lower, or should I wait until we're kind of firing all cylinders and really moving along, and I can get more for my shares?
Well, forgive me if I'm going to ask you a question. This was pre-tax money, so if you take it out and roll it over now, you're going to get to pay taxes on it when you convert it to the Roth, right?
I'm guessing. I don't know too much about it.
Okay, well, if it's pre-tax money, then you want to do the conversion when the stock market's down and take advantage of the prices. Otherwise, if you're going to pay taxes on the conversion, you're going to really suffer if the market goes up.
Okay, and coupled with that is, since I just got out of the Army this year and don't have a job yet, my gross income for this year will be fairly low, so any taxes I would pay, I would probably...
This would be the time to do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
From both standpoints, low income and low values on the stock, it's got to be a good time for you to do that.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks, Adam.
Sure. Thanks.
Appreciate your call. And let's see, we have Lois in Lake Geneva up next. Hi, Lois.
Hi, Larry and Frank. Thanks for taking my call. This program came at an advantageous time for me. I've been looking at where to put some of my husband and my Roth IRA money. Right now, we have one of our investments, we have $85,000 in Vanguard's Prime Money Market Fund in a Roth IRA for us. I want to know what types of funds I should shift this money to and what type of amounts, because I don't want to plop it lump sum into one particular fund. We won't be needing to use this until 2024.
Well, 2024 is a few years from now, so I would call that a modestly long-term horizon. Even Vanguard's Prime Money Market Fund has got to be paying well below 1%.
Right.
So we can almost guarantee you'll get no growth there. Vanguard has got a couple funds that diversify widely around the world's economy in the stock market, and all or some of that probably would be a candidate for some of those low-cost, widely diversified index funds. You could do a total market U.S. You could do a total market foreign. You could do some emerging markets. You could do some real estate investment trusts. All of those have historically had great rates of return over the long haul. I mean, you may want to put an axe in my head tomorrow. I don't know, but 15, 20 years from now, you'll probably be very happy that you shifted those funds over.
So I could shift them, split up that $85,000 among some of those different funds?
Sure. Vanguard's got a complete family that will allow you to diversify globally in index funds, which are extraordinarily low cost, very efficient ways to access the world's markets. It's the lowest risk, lowest cost approach to having equities in the world's markets, and that's certainly what I would do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just one more question. Does anybody ever invest in CDs within a Roth IRA, or is that totally incorrect to do?
I'm sure somewhere out there people are doing it because they're scared and they don't know what else to do. But, you know, it probably you can almost guarantee, and I'm an investment advisor, and guarantee is almost one of those words that I'm not allowed to say.
All right.
Because the SEC will come in, you can't guarantee anybody anything, and that's true. But you can almost guarantee that you won't see any growth on CDs or Treasury bills or the like, and especially at this interest rate environment, it's got to be just you would do just as well to almost literally put the money under your pillow. So I think people need to take measured, responsible amounts of risk and go for the higher long-term return that will hedge inflation and give you real return.
Huh? Thanks very much, Frank.
And unfortunately, that means it's going to go up and down a little, and that's the ugly truth. You just got to steel yourself for that, and I place my hope in a growing world economy.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for calling, Lois. Appreciate your call. And, Frank, thank you so much. The time flew by. And
it did. It's always a pleasure, Larry. It's just always great, and your listeners are always full of interesting and thoughtful questions.
Thank you so much. Frank Armstrong is founder of the investment advisor firm Investor Solutions, Inc., co-author with Paul Brown of Save Your Retirement. He's also authored The Informed Investor. That's another one of Frank Armstrong's book. And the website, a lot of information on his website. I've been there many times, and there's a lot of good information there, good tips and clues, and good sound information at investorsolutions.com, investorsolutions.com. So that's the place to go for his website. Coming up, we're going to take a look at weather and climate with one of our weather guys, Steve Ackerman, next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.